un regard sans concession, en tout cas sur cette logique. Andreas Schleicher, vous êtes directeur adjoint à l'OCDE, vous y avez en charge les politiques éducatives et l'enquête PISA. Alors, je voudrais que vous nous parliez aussi de la réception de ces enquêtes en France, parce que ça a évolué beaucoup depuis la première enquête. On y prend beaucoup plus... On est beaucoup plus attentif à ces résultats qui semblent plus alarmants, sur aussi le fait que la part des très bons baisse en France, dans l'enquête PISA, mais aussi dans PIRLS, dont nous avons parlé à plusieurs reprises. Est-ce que ce n'est pas finalement ça qui peut faire bouger les lignes en France?
Sorry also for not offering a magic trick to move up the PISA rankings. I don't think there is a magic trick. At the same time, I think what the PISA data is showing, you've alluded to this, is that actually rapid improvement is possible. I mean, one of the things that strike me most when I looked at the result over the last 10 years is you see a country like Poland that has been able to reduce the variability in school performance by half in 6 years. You see a country like Korea that was able to double the share of students at the top end of the distribution. You see a country like Brazil that without any real resources was able to move up the entire student population by the equivalent of almost a school year. Germany, Hungary, a lot of countries that have actually shown us that you actually can change things. And I think that's sort of the much more important than the rankings of PISA is the dynamic, the improvement, the change that we have seen. The second point I want to make is it has much less to do with money and resources than we often think. Money, the volume of spending only explains about 20% of the performance variation that we see in the industrialized world. When you go to the developing countries, different story. 20%. How you invest your resources has a much greater influence on success. When you go, for example, to Shanghai, the top-performing education systems on PISA, come up very well. They don't spend very much, but they're very good in attracting the most talented teachers into the most challenging classrooms. And they're very good in getting the best principals to move to the toughest schools.
It's okay.
All right. Thanks. Sorry. If you are a vice principal in a high-performing school in Shanghai, well, let's talk about Europe first, France, Europe. If you're a vice principal, well, you just have to wait until you're old enough and one day you're going to be principal. If you're a vice principal in Shanghai, well, you could be 30 years, 35 years, 40 years, and you want to become principal. The government says to you, yeah, you can do that. But first, you show us that you can turn around one of the poorest schools in our area, one of the schools in the most disadvantaged areas. So they're very, very good in allocating their resources where they can make most of a difference. It's not about how much you spend, it's how they invest their resources. The same as when you look at with GDP, you get the same answer. The third point I want to make is the picture gets so much more interesting when you forget the rankings of PISA and study what are the type of tasks that students are good at and bad at. You take the example of France. All PISA tasks where we ask students to give an answer to a clearly defined question. The reproduction of subject matter content, students come out really well. You know, students in France know a lot, more than students in many other countries. As soon as you give them a task where they have to extrapolate from what they know, where they have to apply their knowledge in an unfamiliar situation, where they have to produce an open-ended question, they struggle. Many fail. Many don't even try. It's the nature of the task that students struggle with that tells you much more about PISA and the French education system in relation to others than the average score. And when you look at this, this actually gets you to the nature of instruction, to the nature of teaching, to the nature of learning. You find that reflected in student attitudes. You know what 15-year-olds tell you about their attitudes to learning, their attitudes to school, the relationships with the teacher, the individual support they get from the teachers. It tells you a lot more about education than you can ever learn from sort of regulations, administration, rules, and laws, and so on. Very, very important point. And sort of in the past, we think about learning as a place, you know. We worry about how we get children into schools. If you look towards the best performing systems, they have actually made learning an activity that extends through everything in life. Success on PISA has very little to do with the number of hours of instruction. In fact, by that score, France should be one of the top performing systems. No? A lot of volume. Success has much more to do how you make learning an activity that students accept as sort of important in their life. No? Many students in France, it's true for many European countries as well, they sort of, southern European countries even more, they say, well, you know, in the morning I have to go to school, I have to do something what my teacher wants, but, you know, in the afternoon, my life has nothing to do with this. If you go to Finland, they have about one-third less hours of instruction than students in France. But students like learning. They say, well, you know, I learned something in school, I'm going to try that out in the afternoon, I study in the nature what I've learned this morning in science class, sort of. Learning has become an activity that they don't do for school. They do it out of pleasure, out of their life. It's the attitude towards school, the attitudes towards learning. When you ask a very interesting question, we ask students, 15-year-olds, PISA, what do you believe accounts for success in math, mathematics? When you ask students in France, what they tell you is, you know, it's talent. If I'm not born as a genius in mathematics, I better study something else. Sort of this idea, you know, it comes from the outside. If you ask that question, that very same question to a Chinese student, 9 out of 10 Chinese students tell you, it depends on me. If I put an effort into this, if I try hard, I trust that my teachers will help me to succeed. It's the belief in the education system. Tells you a lot about, again, you know, this is an education that supports individual students. So when you go one layer more down, what is behind that kind of learning environment? Of course, you could talk about teachers. What high-performing systems do so well, they A, really get the best people into the teaching profession. They made teaching a very, very attractive choice for people to go. And you go to Finland. You know, Finland gets 9 applicants for every teaching post. China gets more than that. Everybody wants to become a teacher. Why? Not because of the salaries. The salaries are okay, but they're not great. They're not better, maybe a bit better than in France, but not sort of at the top end of the distribution. But teaching is such a fascinating job. Every day you work with colleagues. You learn from other colleagues. You're not the person who delivers what someone in the ministry has thought out for you. But you are the profession. You own your professional practice. You have a high degree of professional autonomy. But you work in a collaborative culture. You work with your fellow teachers every day. You work with your fellow schools, you know. What's the most interesting statistics from PISA about Finland, you know? Or, for that matter, Canada is another good country. Not the high average performance, but the fact that only 5% of the performance variation among students lies between schools. Every school succeeds. And that tells you that every school knows what every other school is doing. Every teacher knows what every other teacher is doing. You mentioned before the example of Singapore. It sort of comes from a different kind of history, different kind of culture. But also in Singapore, you know, the teachers, or Japan even better. At the beginning, the teachers work together to prepare the lesson. Then they do the lesson. And then they come again together and evaluate the lesson. Sometimes they use video material to really record what they have done. And they really try to gather to work to develop pedagogical practice. They are not there to sort of implement what's in the textbooks. The teachers are the profession who own their practice, develop professional practice. That's really what high performance in education is really about. This is a supporting environment. You know, the government, the Ministry of Education, doesn't ask itself, you know, how can we sort of prescribe what's happening in classrooms. It asks itself, how can we support our professionals to make the right decisions? Professional autonomy, if you look in the most of the high-performing education system, it's not about public and private schools. You know, the story about public and private schools gets completely exaggerated. Once you control for social background, public and private schools in France come out about the same. And it's true for most countries. The real story has to do with, again, the level of discretion and responsibility they're addressed in school. In most high-performing education systems, you have a lot of responsibility resting at the schools. The schools have to figure out what do we have to teach to our students today. They cannot rely, they cannot. You talked about grade repetition. You know, what's grade repetition? Grade repetition is an easy answer to hand the problem to someone else. I can say to myself, you know, I didn't succeed with the student this year. Let somebody else try to solve the problem next year with the same method, same thing. Doesn't yield improvements in results. Extremely expensive. What high-performing systems do, they invest the same amount of resources to provide additional support to teachers. Again, if you go to Sweden, if you go to Ontario and Canada, to Japan, between 20 and 40% of instruction time is delivered outside formal classroom settings. You know, it's not private tutoring. You have to worry about it as a parent. No, it's the school that takes responsibility and provides the learning environment. And it's a lot cheaper than the kind of dealing with the failure afterwards. Very sort of interesting. It's sort of when you look at this across countries, you do actually see that high-performing systems around the world, they do share a fair number of characteristics that makes them succeed. This success and high performance doesn't come by chance. You can't buy it with money, I think. That's a sort of depressing lesson for people who just think, you know, more of the same is going to be the answer. That you can actually, by changing policies and practices, you can achieve a lot. And there are many, many good examples.